What's happening, y'all? This is Todd Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today, we have Hooper, artist, musician. He's actually a very, very skilled basketball trainer as well. Comes from he's a legacy kid in the training space as well. Somebody I coached in high school at Temple Hall, man. Seen him grow up and talk about how facial hair and all that stuff. Man, 10 years ago.
Thank you for having me, man. I'm so glad to be on here. I saw it, I was like, I gotta reach out, man.
Yeah, no, your dad had recommended you to be on the show. You know, when he came on. And so I'm glad you reached out, man.
Yeah, of course.
You're gonna be on here sooner or later.
Some point, yeah.
Absolutely. We'd love to start the show off with the Wall of Hoop movies, your favorite Hoop movie of all time, and why.
I was saying it was between Space Jam and He Got Game. I had to go with He Got Game just because of the personal attachment I have to the movie. Like, I watched that movie over and over and over again. Like, between those two, I watched them. And then, two, I feel like I learned a lot from that movie. You know what I mean? It's just a legendary movie for me. It's nostalgic. I love how it was filmed. And for me, too, like, He Got Game 13 is my favorite. Jays, the Hoop, and the Soccer, the Tennis. So it just had a personal, you know, personal spot in my heart. So.
Yeah, did you feel any correlation between how your dad trained you versus
coming back into his life, but it was the same principle of wanting your son to be great, you know what I'm saying, and then it's just a path of greatness and what it takes to honestly be on that path, you know. So for me, it was just a lot of relatable lessons. I was like, oh yeah, this movie's kind of
it's still gross. To this day, you can watch it and still feel like it can relate to today.
Yeah.
Besides maybe hooping outside, I don't know if people hoop outside anymore, which they need to.
Not with my knees on.
Listen, man, we hooped outside, our knees are fine. That's where you build the callus, but whatever. So, man, when did you fall in love with basketball?
Couldn't even tell you. That's all I knew. I remember I have a picture. I gotta go find it, but I remember just vividly having this picture when I was maybe two, and I had like this little tight suit that they would lean over the couch so I could walk up and just kind of. So I want to say from a young age, I might have came out of the womb loving basketball, just innately. So yeah, ever since I could remember, honestly, like, I just had a really deep love.
When did things get serious in basketball for you? When do you feel like it went up a level from,
you know, loving it, being a kid, and you know what, I want to pursue this for something in my future?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it was all I knew, especially with my dad being who he was. So, honestly, it was serious for me at a very, very young age. So I want to say maybe 4 or 5, I started really picking up the training. I'd have to ask him, but, like, I know I was doing a lot of things at an age that he didn't teach me. He was like, oh, wow, like, you have, like, to two-ball dribbling at maybe 5, 6 years old and all these different things that I could do. And I was just like, okay, this is probably, you know, again, I believe in God heavy, so I'm just like, let me follow this path. Let me follow what I have, the gifts that I have, and that's all I knew. So I guess it was serious from a very young age.
That's crazy. Saying. And so you started, were you playing club ball? Was it rec league ball at that time?
Yeah.
What was that path? And when did you start recognizing that? I'm sure you were advanced for your age, right?
Just
being a trainer's kid, that's how it usually works. And then 100%. When did you see, oh man, the talent's kind of picking up against me?
I would say, I don't know. I could say when I was 8, I won an MVP of a 13U Park League. So that's when, that's
when
I knew.
You played up to a 13U?
Yeah, I've always played up. That's why, like, in today, I'm like, why are these kids playing their age? But, like, my dad always threw me in the fire because he coached the Palisades when I was young, too. So, like, when I was 6th grade, he had me working out with the high school guys. He even had me working out in 4th, 5th grade with, like, his older guys, you know what I'm saying? Just, again, trainer son stuff. But, yeah, I was at a young age just playing against, I felt like, talent that was always better than me. There wasn't really many people in the gym that weren't as good as me, unless, like, obviously his other clients. But, like, most of the time, especially because he was younger too, so he just had a lot of elite talent in the gym. So I was just always getting my ass busted coming up, which, again, in turn helped. So.
Right. No, yeah. Absolutely. And then rolling into the middle school space, right? Mm-hmm. You know, same thing. Yeah. Where were you playing AAU? And was your dad coaching you?
Yeah, 6th grade. My dad coached me. He was my coach, I feel like, all the way up to 9th grade when I got to high school. But I say he would, because how he had it was he had his program BFT. So for us, he was all about training. So for him, we'd train, and we wouldn't go do big, big tournaments until maybe, I would say, honestly, 7th grade is when we actually hit Vegas for the first time and did the big Vegas tournaments. But before that, it was just the ARC League they had every weekend. And there was always really good teams in the ARC League. So we'd go work out all week. And on Sunday, we'd go play 2 games against kids that were 3, 4 years older than us every single weekend. until we started beating them. And then he was like, okay, you guys are ready to go to this, because he's not putting us in our age bracket no matter what tournament we're in, no matter the name. So he's like, I want to make sure you guys are ready to at least compete with 16, you and your 13. So like,
do the math.
Do the math. But yeah. So he was my coach all the way up until like 9th, 10th grade. I think 10th grade, I went to go hoop with Cal Supreme. There was this team called LAX Hoops that we had, which was really good for a while. And he was the coach of that team. So I would say all the way up until maybe 10th grade AAU style, he was my coach. And then it was Cal Supreme, this team called Game Point. And yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever feel the pressure of a trainer's kid, like that you had to be a certain level, and how did you manage that emotionally?
Yeah. At a young age, I don't know if I knew what that was, you know. So for me, it just was normal. And like I was, you know, better than most. So I never felt like, oh, I'm the weak trainer's kid. Like, I was like, oh, I'm a dog. You coming in this gym, I'm gonna bust you. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't feel the pressure maybe until sophomore, junior, high school, when I started going through a couple things and injuries and all that stuff, I started to feel like, damn, like, I'm his son and I'm not, you know, where I want to be personally. And so, you know, you feel those pressures, but I think I did a good job of not letting it, you know, take over my mind too much and my thoughts too much. Because I was really focused on my injuries, man, you know what I mean? So I didn't really have time to think, oh, I'm disappointing him. You know, I didn't feel that until I decided to put the ball down, you know? Mm. So that was a whole different conversation. And I think that's where that kind of, you know, that interesting part of our relationship kind of started to unravel itself, you know? So,
no, yeah. That's so many questions based around that. But
yeah.
I think the biggest piece that I seen you take away is just the work ethic, right? Mm. You lived in the gym.
Yeah.
You didn't know anything but hard work. And now you take that into other facets of your life.
100%.
What are the biggest things that you think you were taught through that development in basketball that you carry over to your life now?
Honestly, the consistency and showing up to your craft, the determination, the persistence, the grind of, you know, not getting the recognition immediately, I think, and just putting in the unseen hours, the commitment to the craft. Like, it's really the same exact grind. And it's funny, all the cliches hit once you're 21, 22, like, oh, they're not cliches. It's like real, you know? So I would say, that's the biggest things I've learned, man, is honestly everything. The attention to details, I think that's a big one for me, is the attention to detail. Because for what I do, it's so complex that you need the attention to detail if you want to be at a level, you know, a certain level. So I would say the high level work ethic, you know, everything. Yeah, everything from the work ethic to the showing up, consistency, communication, the team aspect of it. Because for me, I got to be able to lead other people, and this isn't their career. You know what I mean? They can go leave whenever they want, and I'm stuck with this. And that's been the biggest learning lesson for me. So just being able to how to be a really good leader, you know, and being able to put people in positions that makes them happy and feels like they're also bringing value and they are valued. And yeah, that's damn near everything. It's crazy.
It's crazy, right? Yeah. No, that correlation of life, people don't understand that basketball can teach you so much when you give it your all, though. I think what happens sometimes is people go and thinking it's all beautiful.
But yeah.
You face so much adversity through your injuries, through just life in general, right? What did you do to overcome your injuries? You said you focused on them earlier.
Yeah.
Explain that.
I would say, yeah, I would say it's just the rehab process, you know, and the commitment to the rehab, you know, because for me, I want to get back on the court so bad, because the injuries I had were so lengthy and I had to sit away. It forced me to like figure out weaknesses and deficiencies in my game that the attention to detail on the opposite side of that. So just focusing on how I could better myself through injuries, and then, you know, the grind of rehabbing, you know, and how much you got to rehab so you don't re-injure yourself, you know what I'm saying? And again, you can't control it, but that rehab process is a lot of learning lessons, you know, on patience and yeah, all of that.
Days and days of the same thing, right?
The same thing over and over.
What would you compare those injuries to in real life now?
That's a good question. I would feel like, I mean, for me, I would say chinks in the armor, I guess, in life, or like, because again, with the career I'm in now, there's a lot of people that will come in, and because they know there's not an immediate gratification towards it, or like people don't pop off, like the excitement's there and it's off, and so people being fickle, I would say maybe that, and you know what I mean, and like really honing in on my mental fortitude and like learning how to not be so emotionally left and right with people, and you know, with my expectations, you know. But again, also standing on boundaries and making people respect those. So I don't know. That's an interesting question, because I'd have to really sit here and be like, I don't know.
No, because I mean, because those are obstacles, right?
Yeah.
Those are the adversity you go through is being injured. Okay. And then you go through an obstacle in your music. What's the biggest hit that you had in your music career?
I would say right now it'd be the Chasing Dreams, the song I have that got placed on.
My bad, Slayer. I said that the wrong way. Oh. We're gonna talk about the
hits. Oh, you mean adversity?
The biggest hit. Like, what was the biggest, you know, failure? I'm gonna put it's not a failure because you're still going, but
yeah.
What was the biggest failure in you know, in this music process so far?
It's really like the anticipation of putting something out and it may not doing what you want it to do or think it'll do. And that, again, that emotional roller coaster of like you put in all these hours and all this stuff, then you release it to the world, and then you kind of have, I call it postpartum, it's maybe a little sensitive, but like I feel like when you put so much into something, you're holding on, you're growing it, and then you finally release it, you know, you got to kind of let go of the expectations, you know. And so I wouldn't say many failures, but there's been so many things where, again, like people coming in and promising things or doing things and other things, and then just the grind of having to make music and getting a studio space and like putting the hours in and like just all of the work that you don't even know is actually going to pay off. You know what I'm saying? Because I don't get to go to games every day. I don't get to like go test my skill every day as far as like in front of people or like, you know what I'm saying? So for me, that's the biggest adjustment too, is just like putting in all these hours and I don't really get to go to a game unless it's like a concert or like I'm putting out a project, and then people's perception is like what you put out, and then there's like all these other things that I have or I'm working on that people just have no idea, and it's like, so they're only getting judged off what I'm putting out. Other failures, I've built you know, teams that have fallen apart. Again, I think that's one of the things. I've had deals on the table that I've had to turn down even though they look good, but it's just like I would have been effed over in the long run, and just having to say no to something that was there, you know, just to believe in myself to keep going and be like, no, I can build more leverage myself, and just that belief in myself, you know. Yeah. So just all the no's, all the iffy energy that comes around, and that's, you know, that's part of it, you know what I'm saying? But man, I don't know, you put out a project, see what it does. I wouldn't call it a failure, but you know what I'm saying, like,
yeah, no, we don't call it failure because you keep it pushing, but I guess that was the word I wanted to use.
Yeah,
it's just a
constant getting yourself up every day and to keep going at it when you really don't have that solidified reception to it, you know, or the, I didn't get a deal from this project, or I didn't get, because if that was the case, everybody would probably be doing that, you know? So just the grind of it and the belief in yourself when, again, like even the last 8 years, right, since I've started, when I first started, there was a hell of people that were like, oh my gosh, it's hard, and I go back, this music is not good to what I'm making now, and the support's there and all this shit is different. But again, people go through things, and that's where I have to learn, like, you know, it's gonna fit who it's for, not everything's for everybody, people are gonna be a part of it one minute at the next. So it's really just all the adjustments on the human side, you know, that I've had to really learn. And music just taught me so much about myself and made me grow up so quick, and I'm still growing, you know, but like really having to mature, like spiritually, physically, like mentally, like all around, you know, and just being able to have the mental fortitude to like wake up every day and give this shit my all when there's no, you know. So yeah, I gotta find the affirmations in the very small things. Somebody shoots me a test like, yo, this is good, or the sync placements I've been getting, like, those are huge. I never would have thought I'd get my music on a huge TV show, yeah, so you know,
dope.
Like,
so dope. I watch Power all the time, and I'm like, right, Uncle Lil.
Yeah, and then in those moments too, not belittling them, you know, because they're happening. And so for me, I'm not gonna call it jaded, but you kind of have these things come, and I want to get excited, but you know that, like, okay, but what's next? You know, for me, because it has to be that, because for me, it's momentum. So like, yeah, man, just learning to enjoy and live in the moment and all the things that are gonna come from it. Man, not having money in my pocket, you know, like people not understanding that I'm sacrificing not working a 9-to-5, because if I do, it's gonna take so much time away from all this momentum I've been building. So I gotta sometimes struggle. I gotta sometimes not have a, you know, check, and it's just the reality of it, you know, for what I'm doing, whether people understand or not. I've had family members don't understand, you know, back and forth arguments, like, and that's been the hardest thing for me, is just like, again, adjusting on a human level to all the things that come with what I'm doing, you know. Yeah. I feel like that's a solid answer.
Yeah, no, that, no, you answered it now. That was it.
Okay,
that was
all right, I was getting there.
No, you, I think it, that's why I wanted to open up, because I want people to see that it's the same thing as having an injury. It's the same thing of going on this basketball journey, people doubting you, things not going out the way that you called it to, you know, you wanted it to. Even your basketball career went like that, right, a little bit. It's like, 100%. Man, you worked for something and then, hey, you know what, I'm not going to do this because of things that you went through, things that out of your control,
out almost. Out of my control, man. So, a lot of those injuries were out of my control. Like,
so, and then you pivoted, though. And so there's that basketball turn. You pivoted. You had to turn your direction to somewhere else, but with the same effort that you had before.
Yeah.
And so I want to talk a little bit about high school.
Yeah.
Your experience through high school, because you had some highs, you had super lows, and then you finished on a high, right?
Yeah.
And so just talk about that, your experience being at Campbell Hall first.
Yeah.
And, you know, coming behind the Holidays, like the older Holidays were there, and then playing with Aaron and being a starter on freshman when the Valley was popping back then, just like it is now. But so tell me about the best time you remember and then the worst time through your first couple of years at Campbell Hall.
So I started off before my first day of school at Campbell Hall even started. Mind you, I'm coming from the inner city. I'm with, you know what I mean? Like, and not super inner city, but like, I've never been to private school. I've never been around this kind of lifestyle. Like, so like, I'm thinking, so we're having practice leading up, you know, the summer practices, I'm getting to know my teammates. I literally fractured my ankle before my first, like maybe 2 days before school started. So my first experience at Campbell Hall as a freshman on campus is me in crutches with this cast walking around, foreshadowing what was gonna happen for the rest of my high school career. But so that was an interesting start. But honestly, man, Campbell Hall was a really great school. I did have a good time. Of course, I had my ups and downs. I was a very to myself kid, so I feel like a lot of people kind of looked at me a little different. I didn't get along with a lot of people, and I didn't, you know, network like I probably should have back then. Like, I knew, but again, that's all I knew. So I was just, right, you know, mainly in my headphones. Again, young, I'm learning, making dumb mistakes here and there. Didn't go to parties at all, for real, so maybe that's another thing, too. I enjoy my experience playing with Aaron. You know, I know they kind of, like, recruited me to go there as well. So just going there as a freshman, starting as a freshman, I remember Cole was there, who was a senior, and he was just, like, took me and Aaron under his wing. I know we had an interesting first year with Coach Wax and everything and all of that. But, I mean, I had a good experience at Campbell Hall. I think really what deterred it was the injuries, you know, and the consistent injuries. So I was always in a mind state that I might not have been in if I wasn't injured, which affected me off the court too, you know, with when it comes to making friends and all of that. You know, me and Aaron were close for most of Campbell Hall. My boy Colin had transferred in, which is, you know, we were close. So that was nice to have somebody that I knew. But I would say my experience was dope, man. And Thomas came in and started coaching, and he's known me since I was a kid. So I felt safe, you know what I mean? Yeah. And you came along, you guys were like great people to have for me at Campbell Hall. You guys really made my experience there, and that's not no BS. Like, cause I didn't get along with a lot of the kids, and I didn't get close with a lot of the kids aside from like my teammates, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then after all the injuries, all the, you know, it was a lot of politics back then that, again, I could care less about, but everybody else was worried about them. And I think it affected kind of the fun of us playing, you know?
Yeah.
And I know me and Aaron would talk about it sometimes, like, bro, we just want to hoop, you know what I'm saying? And again, there was other things that got in the way of that, you know? So just, it was just a lot, man. So I know after a while, I was like, man, just let me get up out of here, you know what I'm saying? Like, then I had some things going on off the court that, you know, nobody really knew about that I needed to leave. So I was like, yeah, let me get up out of here, go to Village Christian. I got Benny over there that me and him always wanted to play together. I was trying to get a lot of people over to Campbell Hall. I was trying to get Benny to come to Campbell Hall, my homie Chris Sandiford to come to Campbell Hall at the time. But anyways, I had a lot of friends going to Village. So I was like, you know what? Me and a couple homies talked, and then at the end of the day, it was really up to my parents. They said they left it up to me, but they were like, nah, you're going to do what we want you to do.
Right.
So they were just like, you like Village? I was like, yeah, I like Village. So when I transferred over there, it just felt like a fresh start. I did have some minor injuries over there too, but nothing that really kept me down too long.
Nah, he was cooking.
I was cooking over there. It was fun. Got to win a CIF championship.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I know Campbell Hall also went to the CIF championship, I think, that year. And I was watching their game on the bus ride. I remember on the bus ride to our practice. But that was high school was fun. Campbell, I didn't really have many stories outside of the basketball court just because I wasn't at these parties. Like, I would go, like, My dad's picking me up from Kemble Hall after practice. And y'all remember, I'm going to Gold's Gym and not doing my homework at 8 at night. And wait, it was crazy grind he had me on. So I'm sure he would do it a little different now. But yeah, overall, man, I love Kemble Hall. It's a great school. I'm glad to see there's more color there now. You know what I'm saying? Because it wasn't much when we were there. And the athletics is going crazy now. You know what I'm saying? And so I had a good experience, you know. Playing with Aaron was amazing. We just got to really just trade buckets, which is nice, you know, competing against each other in practice. Then we had Jordan Cohen, who was good coming up. Right. So that was good too as well. Yeah, it was fun. I had fun. Thomas being the coach, it was a lot of fun memories, man. Those are my heydays. I didn't go to college. So those are most of my memories is high school. Sure. Yeah.
And then like you said, man, transitioning over to Village. Yeah. You guys had a stacked team, man.
Super.
Yeah. I was coaching the Heritage at the time.
Yeah.
And they didn't take y'all out in the fourth quarter and y'all was up by 30. I remember that.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, your coach was...
Was he wildin'?
He was... I mean, yes and no.
He was probably like that.
He was trying to put his foot down because it was our first year. We didn't even have anybody.
Yeah, I remember that.
We didn't have anybody. So y'all wound up winning by 60.
Did we?
Oh, yeah. It's online. I'll pull it up on YouTube after this.
I got to see this.
You had 26.
Listen, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. You remember those. Because I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to come back. And so we end up overall, as my coach, when I was a coach there, my record over Village, we up.
Yeah, I would hope so
that,
now.
That
yeah.
One day, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
We'll remember this.
Yeah.
And, Benny had a couple dunks on a couple people. Chris was wilding. It was
Yeah, we used to blow teams out for sure.
And y'all played fast, man. And you were like, you could see your bag had come together. Like, you always saw the handle, the jump shot came together.
Yeah.
The point guard, it's like everything came together, man. You were fun to watch, fun to coach.
Man, thank you.
And those are some times. So,
yeah.
So, you leave high school on a basketball high.
Mm.
What happens with college recruitment and just about that time in your life?
Man, so it went from the basketball high, having all these friends, to like the darkest time of my life, you know what I'm saying? Because I think I'm like, okay, I'm going to Mexico State. I've gone through all these injuries in high school and I still have a school. Because I had schools that were tapped in, like high level school, especially my 10th to a junior year. Oh, I had calls. I was like, oh wow, Pac-12, this. So once I got hurt, and then I found out, because I had a, I'm gonna get to it, my bad, but I had a dream. San Diego State was my dream school. And they were heavily recruiting me because they wanted a point guard. Man, I guess something happened where I was like, oh, basketball is cooked for me at least. Because somebody told the staff that I didn't want to go there. I just told them a whole bunch of stuff and they just stopped recruiting me. And I never understood why until after basketball was over. I ran into one of the coaches. He was like, yeah, man, we wanted you bad. I was like, I wanted to go. What happened? He was like, oh, man, there was like multiple people that called us and said you didn't want to go there. I was like, huh?
Ooh, I would ask.
And they were like, I don't remember that. I was like... And again, knowing who my dad was, I'm like, he probably ruffled somebody. Something happened with politics, and it always affected me at the end of the day. But anyways, so I was supposed to go to Mexico State because I still had that relationship. And because the coach, Marvin Menzies, he had offered me in ninth grade. We always had that, you know, relationship. So I'm like, I want to keep it honest. I had these shoulder problems. I woke up one day, like, I want to say I graduated 2015 in maybe March or April. And I say June, I woke up one day, nothing crazy. I just played a tournament that weekend. I woke up and just couldn't move my arms. And I'm like, like literally so painful in my shoulders that I couldn't lift my arms. And I'm like, and at that point I know my body and you know, my dad also knows. I'm like, no, this is serious. I'm gonna go get this looked at. Like, he was like, all right. So ended up the next day, I still couldn't really move them, very stiff. And I'm like, what the F did I, you know, what did I do? I go get MRIs and apparently my labrums in both my shoulders were completely torn, like all the way shredded up.
From shooting?
No, so I had subluxation in my shoulders damn near all the high school. So like my shoulder would like kind of slip out and slip right back in. Like, and not, it wouldn't dislocate completely, but it would just and go right back in. And I'd be like, ah, shit. And then like 3-4 minutes later, I'm like, all right, I'm good. I can go hoop. So I guess after all these years of doing that, my shoulders one morning just were like, nah, bro. But again, I'm like, it was God, because like I get that, and I'm like, go get MRIs, or like your shoulder's completely torn and out. I could have lied to the coach, went on campus, but I could not move, like I couldn't do anything. Like, so I'm going on campus. If I have an injury, it could be a
handshake,
get him
like
in
this.
Trouble. Yeah, you know. So if I come to campus with the pre-existing injury and I didn't sign my paperwork yet, you know, it could have got them in trouble. So I was just honest. I had to, like, you know, at the time my dad was talking to a couple of people, consulting him, like, yo, what should we do? You know, and mind you, I have a close relationship with Marvin. So I was like, I'm gonna just be honest and see what happens. So I'm gonna just tell him, you know, yo, I'm dealing with this. I know I haven't signed my paperwork yet. What should I do? I know I can't come to campus with pre-existing injuries without signing my letter of intent. You know, at the time insurance wouldn't cover it. And he was like, well, you could stay home in gray shirt, start these classes online, you know, rehab and do that. So I was like, cool, sounds good, right? I find out that my mom's insurance maybe, so this is now, what is this, May, June, I get the MRIs in June. So then from like July to maybe September, October, I had 3 dates each set up. So the first date was for my original surgeries. I go in there, paperwork, everything, we go to the doctor's office, like the pre-op, the day before surgery. So we're going in there. Some happened with the paperwork where they like misfiled some shit, so I couldn't get surgery the next day. And we had planned, I mentally prepared for surgery, like, you know, you're getting ready for surgery. No. So I'm like, okay. So we tried again a month later, same thing. We set up another appointment. Paperwork's good. I went to the doctor's office a couple of times a week prior. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but some happened again where they fucked up the day before surgery and I couldn't get it covered. They're like, oh, the insurance wasn't trying to cover it. This,
I'm gonna beep all these F bombs out. This is for the kids.
Yeah, okay, my bad. Let me try to keep it clean. I've been doing my best.
You good. Hey, I like the realness.
Yeah. And then the third time I had my surgery dates set up again, and the day of surgery, we got through the pre-op. I'm like, cool. The day of surgery, we get to the doctor's office and they're like, yeah, you don't have a surgery scheduled today. And I'm just like, I broke down crying. I remember that my dad had dropped me off at the office. I went upstairs. Cause mind you, my mental is already kind of getting shot now that this insurance isn't covering my surgery. So I'm thinking like, I'm screwed. You know what I'm saying? So my mind's already kind of drifting away from basketball. I'm starting to like, you know, do things that I would normally do. Nothing crazy, but just like, you know, hanging out with friends later than usual, going out later than usual. I'm kind of like giving up on myself at this point. So once that third surgery hit, I kind of went into a dark place. It was like, the insurance, they were just like, yeah, our insurance, it just can't cover it. So I'm like, I don't know what I'm like, I'm done, right? So 2 months go by, I'm over here, you know, again, I was smart. So through all this time, as I'm going through this, like I started to kind of write poetry because I was by myself for real. All my friends had left for college, all my close friends are gone. So I'm kind of back home really by myself. So like, I started writing poetry for some reason just to like, you know, let out what I was feeling. And, you know, keep that in the back of the mind. So as I'm going through all of this, what happens? Thomas calls me, like, maybe a month after that last. He calls me, like, yo, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm home. He's like, what do you mean you're home? He was like, I'm like, I'm home, bro. Like, I'm done hooping. I quit. He was like, what you mean? I'm like, so I told him my situation. And somehow he had this connect to this doctor that...
Of course he did.
It's Thomas, yeah. So shout out to him, man. He really came through. He and was like, oh, we're going to sign you up. He had called my mom, called my dad, like, yo, I didn't know this was going on. Y'all should have told me, whatever. So he got me with this PPO program that you could sign up and get PPO insurance for like 6 months at a time. And I got accepted into the program. So I got the best surgeon for my surgeries I can get. Yeah, so my first surgery was December of 2015 for my right shoulder, January 2016 of this shoulder. Now here's the kicker. My coach that I committed to in New Mexico State, Marvin, and mind you, he's the only coach I had a relationship with, not the assistant coaches. Mm-hmm. He leaves midseason and goes to UNLV. Like, he gets a job at UNLV and lives midseason. And then I didn't hear from him for like a month or two. So I'm like, I hit him, I'm like, yo, what's up? Like, you know, and not hearing from him, and my dad wasn't hearing from him, and it's kind of new because Marvin's usually like very communicative. So I'm sitting here like, bro, I don't know, what am I? You know, it's just all this uncertainty for me. And I'm just like, and again, all I knew was basketball. I didn't do anything else coming up. I didn't do anything extracurricular at all. Like, didn't draw, didn't go ride horses, didn't do watch sunsets, didn't go to the beach for real, like, unless I was working out. So all I know and all I've personified myself is as a basketball player. So as I'm going through all of these, I think that not knowing who I was after all of this is going on. So, all right, let me finish, my bad. I get off tangent, but. So he finally calls me, maybe I wanna say March of 2016, calls me, he's like, yo, I had to get some things settled up over here, yada, yada, yada. You know, we don't have a scholarship this year for you, but what you can do is come on, we'll get all the financial aid possible, you can redshirt here, and then, you know, and then we make sure your shoulders are good, and then next year we'll have a scholarship for you, and then you'll be fine. So I was like, oh, perfect. That works. He's like, yeah, come out in like, what was it, May? Come out in May, June, come for a visit, yada yada. I'm like, all right, cool, I'll be in Vegas anyways. All right, I'll come by. So again, I'm rehabbing these two shoulders at the same time. I'm going hard in my rehab. I'm literally rehabbing. My dad has one of his runs at the Orsini when at the time he was staying at the Orsini. He has a basketball run. And I'm in shape. Like, it's probably the best shape I've been in maybe since sophomore year. I was like athletic again. I was just ripped, you know what I'm saying? Like, I really was busting my tail trying to work. For some reason, in that run, I skipped a part. So I went up to the visit. I saw my locker, I saw the gym, I worked out with some of the guys, I was killing. Everything was good, grandiose, right? He was showing me this is what your schedule's gonna be like, yada, yada. Again, there's no NIL to sign because I'm gonna be on financial aid, so there's nothing I've signed yet. I come back home, I'm supposed to leave for school in like 3-4 weeks, right? Then I'm hooping with my dad at this run. I pinned somebody's shot on the backboard and my right shoulder just went. I felt it do something, and I was like, and I was so mad because it hurt, and everybody in the gym knew my situation. So like when that happened, and I'm like very emotional about it because it's like, there's no way. Yeah. I know I messed this up. I'm like, I walked, and mind you, the gym's downstairs, like, because you got to go upstairs. Mm-hmm. Man, I walk, I'm kicking trash cans. I'm like outside, I'm crying when I get out to the front by myself. And just like, I knew at that point, I was like, I'm done. And I gave it one more try. Like, I was like, nah, there's no way I'm hurt. Because even the surgeon, he was like, I'm one of the best. There's no way, like, you well, did that, right? And I'm like, and he was. I'm like, nah, bro, it did. Right. So I went to go get an MRI. He's like, with the sutures, because they weren't even, like, fully healed and all these things. He was like, I can't even tell what's wrong. Like, I'm going to have to go in, and you're going to wake up on the table. It was so dramatic. He's like, you're going to wake up on the table, and it's either going to be a couple weeks or you're going to be 6 to 8 months, and we're going to see. Man, I woke up on that surgery table. And mind you, there was a month into surgery, so that whole month, I'm, like, lifting. I'm like, nah, my shoulder's fine. And I could lift and do everything I was doing before, but I could feel there was a slight weakness in there. So I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. And so I wake up on the table, and he was just like, yeah, man, I don't know how you did it, but you re-tore everything we did, and it's gonna be 6 to 8 months. And I just was crying. Mind you, I don't think my parents were at that surgery either, because they had both had to work, and it was dope. Like, whatever the Thomas program had, they had the car service, so they had picked me up because surgery's in Newport. And I had my ex at the time. We had just started dating, so she was with me. But yeah, man, I woke up on that table and just broke down in tears, and I kind of just like, after that, I kind of spiraled, you know, and I took a break away from my dad. Me and him didn't talk for a while, and it wasn't him, it was me. I didn't talk to my mom. I was living with friends. I was just doing a bunch of dumb stuff. And
why the separation from your family?
Because I felt like it was I felt disappointed. I felt like I was a disappointment for me, you know, quitting basketball. I felt like all the money they put in, all the time and the hours they put in. Damn, I'm getting emotional talking about it, but all the things they put in to me, and I knew they did, all the hours, I remembered everything my mom and my dad had did for me. So like me making that decision to stop playing basketball, like I knew, A, probably wouldn't sit right with my dad, and I just had to disassociate myself. I didn't know who I was, bro. Like, I'm like, I was going through some dark stuff. You know, I was having thoughts that I've never thought I would ever have or visualize, and I really had to like go heal myself. I didn't go to therapy, which I probably should have, you know. But that's where I was saying, so I just used poetry as my outlet, and all the people I had around me at the time were like, bro, you should probably try to put this over beats and see what it could do. And then I was around people that were making music. And again, I'm playing basketball. I'm like, and you remember Eamon, right? Mm-hmm. I looked at that. I'm like, man, I'm never making music. You know what I'm saying? Like,
curbside pickup.
Yeah, curbside pickup. Shout out Eamon, man, wherever he's at. But like seeing that and just like, I'm like, you know, I never teased it or anything like that. But for me, I was like, man, I'm not doing music. I'm a basketball player. Like, you know, but we would freestyle on the bus, whatever. I always had a musical inclination. I always loved music, always on the aux, so whatever. But yeah, man, I don't even really remember most of those times as far as like what exactly I was doing, but I just remember that I was driving a couple friends around. I don't know if you know the Twins. Remember the Twins? I had homies that I had, but anyways, they were doing a bunch of big Vine YouTube stuff at the time.
That
the vlog era was, I mean, it's big now, but they were doing this back then, and they were big, so they didn't have a car. So I'm like, man, let me just hang with y'all. I'll drive y'all wherever you got to go, because I know I'm at least start meeting people. I end up meeting this engineer from Sublime. He's like the engineer for the band Sublime. Yeah, because one of the twins were dating some girl that had a session there. Crazy. But he was like, bro, what do you do? And I was like, oh, nothing, bro. Like, I just write poetry.
I'm driving
like,
right now.
I'm driving them around. I'm just with my dogs, you know? He was like, you do music or anything? I was like, and I was like, no, I write poetry and stuff like that, but nothing crazy. Like, and he was like, nah, bro, come pull up tomorrow by yourself. And then I'm a, because we just kicked it off, so he was just being cool. So he's like, yeah, pull up tomorrow. And then from there, kind of like another homie that I had who was doing music, and he put his whole career down because he thought I had something. He was like, oh, bro, I'm going to stop doing my music. I'm going to work with you. I want to like produce and help you out because I believe in you. And I'm like, huh? So that was like the first couple of signs. I was like, okay, you know what? And then I started to really start to fall in love through those times. I really can't remember the exact transition it was, but I just remember like, oh no, this is it, you know? And then having that talk with my dad where like, I was like, yo, can we meet up? I showed him like the only two things I had recorded. And he was like, oh, this is hard. Like, and I wasn't expecting that from him. Like to this day, I'll thank him because I'm thinking he's gonna be like, man, whatever, yo, you gotta, you know what I'm saying? So.
I wanna pause just for a second because there was something that you touched on a few times in that story, man. Thank you for sharing that,
of course.
I think that's powerful, man.
Yeah. Like,
one, that you were in this bad time, but something amazing was birthed in that bad time. And that's where God meets us, right at our lowest point. People always think that God's supposed to be here in our high points, but he's going to meet us at our low point because that's when we realize we need him the most. And so
100%.
That's dope. Two, you can talk about your identity being in basketball. I think this is so major because I think you as a kid, your identity was in basketball, but sometimes now these parents' identity is in basketball for their kids even. But how important is it for someone to have their identity rooted in something that is almost eternal, right? Basketball could be taken away. Music could be taken away. How important is it for you to have your identity in something that's surpasses all those things?
Yeah. And that was the biggest transition for me, was not doing that, because I learned, because after I went through that, I was like, and those low times, I was like, bro, I'm not even meant to live like this. You know, I've always been a purposeful being as a kid. I've always had, like, I mean, I died as a baby. You know what I mean? It was a miracle baby to come back to life. So for me, I always hold on to that.
What do you mean? Sorry.
Oh, my. Oh, yeah. So when I was 4 months old, my mom, my dad and my mom were staying with his mom at the time. So she was taking my grandma to work, and my dad, I was sleeping in the bed with my dad, and he had rolled over on me while he was sleeping. So he didn't know. So I guess my mom had that mommy inclination, you know, so she dropped, she said, I felt something strong in my spirit tell me that you're not okay. So I dropped your grandmother off at a bus stop and said, you're gonna have to figure this right out. And I rushed home. And it was right. You were literally flat and purple and like, yeah. And so I guess luckily there was a fire department across the street. So they came over, got me, you know, to the hospital. But I was in a coma for, I think, like 2-3 days. And I don't know if you ever heard of the Baha'i faith, but my mom side of the family, they grew up on the Baha'i faith. So my grandma on that side, her community is vast around the world. So she had sent out, and I still have it in my house right now. I have this booklet of prayers from all over the world for my health and for my life, you know what I mean? And it's like 100 pages of like 300 prayers plus of people around the world. She sent out like to the national, they have a national house of assembly. So it's like the main headquarters of the Baha'i faith in the entire world, you know, and they sent out a whole thing. So I was in a coma. The doctor was like, you weren't supposed to be alive. Like you're supposed to have brain damage and you don't have any of that. So the fact that I, you know, wasn't done with life, I've always held on to that, you know, and that knowing, and I've always felt that purpose in my body, you know? So, that's what happened when I was a kid, man.
That is wild.
Yeah, man. You know, I had my dad's suicide note because he was very, you know, it was a very crazy, and they were young, mind you, my dad was 22, my mom's 19, 20, so they're kids, like. So yeah, man, they got through that, but that's something I'll forever know that I'm supposed to be here with that
prayer
with
purpose. Works, man.
Man, prayer
faith,
works.
Prayer, faith, and just purpose, man. Like you said, God had a bigger purpose.
I had a bigger purpose. And so through those times, that's what I was saying. So how I got myself out of it was the journaling, but then I just started picking up books I never read before. You know, I started picking up books. I got in tune with my spiritual side. So I got introduced to a couple people where I started learning about, you know, and then on top of the music, I was learning because I'm learning from this engineer that's super, super good at what he does. And I'm learning he's manipulating sound frequencies. And in my head, I'm like, that does something to the human body, right? And so I started deep diving into different energies and as far as like that we can't see, you know what I'm saying? Different dimensions that we can't see and different just the frequencies and how our body reacts to them, because it's science, you know, too, at the end of the day. So for me, I'm like, oh, started pairing crystals with certain sounds and then meditating with them and just like having these profound visions. And again, praying heavily, you know what I mean? Being very intentional with my prayers and what I'm asking for and like just clarity, you know, and just very, it just answers of who I, you know, who I am. And I started to find myself and again, root myself in me instead of like a thing, you know what I mean? Or instead of a career path, I'm like, oh, I'm falling in love with who I am as a human, you know? And for that, it's gonna take me so far and it's gonna allow me to move in rooms as authentically as I can possible because I'm not attaching myself to a career as, you know, per se, yeah. Like, oh, I'm this. Like, no, I'm a human that is just really good at doing these things because I've worked on them, you know, and kind of making that the perspective. And it's hard, you know what I mean? Over the last few years, obviously the pandemic, that put me back in like, you're not healed, buddy. You're not where you think you are, you know? Because
I was about to say, man, your journey is
far from over.
Far from over, you know? And then even in that, man, I want to encourage you to always point it back to God, right? We search for so many things and he just wants us, like we're made in his image.
Yeah.
And that's what we got to know is that we're in his image. So that human that you're falling in love with is the God that you're falling in love with.
Yeah.
And be clear and concise when you communicate with God. Because he'll show you what all those things, even the things you're looking for with matching sounds and crystals and that stuff, that stuff's already inside of you. You don't need no physical material.
Yeah.
That's called idols.
Yeah.
And so where you're, you know, you're on this journey.
Yeah.
God's going to take you where he's going to take you.
100%.
But understand that there's no physical material thing, whether that's a basketball, a crystal, a person that can take you where God's going to take you when you 100%. Are in relationship with him.
Yeah.
And what he's given us is Jesus to do that, right?
No,
and so continue on that journey. I encourage you. I'm here for all that too. You know what I mean?
Because
there's so much more inside you. Because I believe that's why you're just scratching the surface.
Yeah,
God's showing. He's revealing himself to you about what your real purpose is. The kid who was supposed to die. The kid who was supposed to be a basketball player. Now you're somebody who's supposed to impact millions of people with your music. With the gift that God is giving you in a whole different way, because your heart is pure gold, bro.
Yeah.
Like, your heart is pure gold. I've known this since I've known you, right?
Yeah,
and even just hearing you talk, your heart is pure gold. Mm. And that's what you have to share with the world.
Yeah.
It's gonna be based in, hey, God raised me from the dead.
Yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a testimony, bro.
No,
so
it is.
Continue that journey, man.
I got you. And you're absolutely right, too, because for me, like Kendrick Lamar said it in that speech at that college recently, he was like, I'll talk to God like he's the homie. And you know, since I've really been living on my own and what, that's really like every day I'm on the way here. I'm like, yo, we do like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Just like talking.
We were just talking about that before you came in the studio.
Yeah, right.
It's called the presence of God.
Yeah.
So there's this, the spirit of God and there's the presence of God, right?
Mm-hmm.
Spirit of God is the Holy Spirit, which lives in, you know, you when you're saved. And, you know, God gives you feelings, emotions, intuition, all those types of things, right?
Yeah.
We're living by that. But the presence of God is something that lives outside of you.
Yeah.
Because you are talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's present with us at all times.
Yeah.
And people forget that. We talk to God sometimes like he's still in heaven.
Yeah, no, he's
he's inside.
I tell people like, yo, right, no story, your intuition is God speaking to you, whatever you may call it, you know. And I had mentioned the even the crystal stuff, not like that's the pathway, but just like realigning, you know, like if I fall asleep to a certain frequency, like I know that.
Yeah,
it's
so I know there's sound. So I read some stuff. I actually saw a study on that too, like sorry, because my son has trouble sleeping. So I was trying to find the right sound that gives his body, like your body is at peace at different sounds and stuff. I understand that for sure. I get what you were saying.
Yeah, and the meditative practices and whatnot. Because I also, too, believe in the spirits of ancestor energy, too, and things like that. And it all comes from God, which I believe, too. And just trying to find that, you know, the presence. But like you said, at the end of the day, it's always God. And that's what I've been saying, too. You know what I mean? For me, it's like right here in the belly, like, what am I supposed to do? Got you. Like, you're right. We're all God's children. And like you said, we're made in the image of God because we all are made in how he sees us. You know what I'm saying? So again, learning, realizing that. And yeah, man, you're absolutely right.
That's dope, man. No, I appreciate you sharing that, man. I think those are the parts of the journeys that people don't listen to, man. How a lot of kids are trying to be where you're actually at.
Yeah.
With basketball. Like, son of a trainer, you had the skill set to go Division I.
Yeah.
You're there.
Yeah.
Injury stop you. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with your life now? First, find yourself. Mm-hmm. Find your identity in something that's bigger than you, right?
100%.
And in God. Now, how do you take who you are and pour purpose? And so you found your music.
Yeah.
You found your pen.
Yeah.
Through all that traumatic trauma, through all the pain, through all the injury, you found something that you love and low key are almost more passionate about than you are about basketball. Like, yeah, you going hard, dog. Like,
I'm going very, like, I'm a psychopath, man. I'm going very hard. And it's funny, I stay around basketball too, because there's so many high level guys in the gym. And now that I work with them personally, and I never post it. And it's not, I don't care if people post or not, but like, it's just like seeing these guys develop. Like, they'll send me videos from their clips and just all these things. I'm like, oh, this is amazing, you know, and it's fulfilling. Because at the end of the day, I feel like I'm at that point now at 28. I didn't feel this way 5-6 years ago. And that's why I was trying to get my dad to understand, like, yo, I had to step away. You couldn't force me to come around and do that because of my relationship with Hoop, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so now it fulfills me to come back around and obviously support you because you're my father and I want to see you win, you know? And I know my brain and your gym is going to only benefit you, you know what I'm saying? And then two, at the same time, like, we've been doing this for years. I don't want to waste what, again, God has given me the talent to have, the brain to have. And I still study hoop. I have basketball playing in the studio. Like, I got a Nike ball that sits here. I got my hoop here with the little tight hoop ball that I have. Like, basketball is still very much, I still study. I still go to games. They'll catch me WNBA games, NBA games, tucked off somewhere and just, like, watching it like this. Like, I'll still watch film. Like, I'm just a, you know, I'm just very passionate about it. It ain't going anywhere, you know? So, but, yeah, with music, same thing. I'm studying YouTube videos like all day. I really taught myself this stuff because I didn't have a music mentor. I still don't really have one, you know, and I'm looking for that now. But I didn't have somebody come and teach me how to engineer myself or write or structure songs or do any of that. I literally learned everything up to this point mostly on my own. And and that's one thing I want to say, the biggest misconception is maybe that people don't have because they don't get to see.
Hold up. We're going to save it for the segment,
my
bro.
My bad.
We can do it right now. All right, fix the next segment. Misconception about yourself that you want to make clear. Go ahead.
I don't know if people don't know, you know, if people still put the work in or whatnot, but it's the same grind. And even because the Unseen Hours, maybe it's a new generation, you got to post all you do or whatever. But like, I am a psychopath about, you know, my work ethic when it comes to the music, and people don't get to see it, you know what I'm saying? So I would say that, yeah, that's the biggest misconception, is maybe I stopped working hard, you know, I don't know. That's how I feel. Like, maybe people look at it like, oh yeah, you're doing music, but like, no, man, I've taught myself everything I know. Like, there wasn't somebody that came in my studio and was like, oh yeah, this is how you do it. Yeah. Or this is how you do it. This is how you know. I've had to literally hours on hours of like studying how people engineer their songs. And still to this day, I'm still stutters. Again, it's a learning process, but like, just I take pride in that, you know. It's like, oh, I really taught myself this, you know, like, I really taught myself how to structure songs, push music, market music, started an LLC on my own, did all this with nobody telling me how to do it, you know. So I want to say that's the biggest misconception. I may have just gotten into music and got help, you know, or like, oh, you're so and so.
You're connected because
you're connected. You're so and so. It's like NBA trainer. Like, no, even like the sync placements. Oh, well, you just know song. No, like the cast chose those songs. Like, you know what I mean? Like, which I come to find, I didn't know that. The cast has to choose the songs at the end of the day because they got to, there's other people involved in these decisions.
So Tank put them up there for you.
Yeah, Tank submits them. And then it's like, he's like, oh, these ones. But then the cast and the other people, he has a boss that has to ultimately be like, oh, okay, this one, you know? So, and even it's not just Tank anymore, you know? So it's like, it's a couple other people now that I've connected with and signed some deals with that are like, oh, it's about to start.
It's
moving.
Dope though how that basketball connection with Tank
I'm
though
saying,
opened
yeah,
that door.
And
right?
Tank hit me. It's not like I hit Tank. Tank reached out to me and was like, bro, I've been like, in the first initial meeting was when I first started. So I went over to the studio, I saw how it worked. He was kind of explaining to me like, this is what you're gonna go through if you really wanna do this. And he was explaining to me, because at the time he had LJ with him, you know, I'm LJ Curry. So he was telling me how LJ transitioned from basketball to music and how so-and-so did it. So I was like, okay, cool. 3-4 years later, Tank calls me like, yo, you're ready. Like, I've been listening to your music and you're ready, send me music now.
Just to clarify, we're talking about Tank Thorpe, guys. He is a music exec in the entertainment world.
Yeah.
His son, Derek Thornton Jr.
Super talented. I'm working with Derek now too. Derek's a fire producer, so me and Derek be making music now.
That makes sense. It's because of thoughts, but they hoop together and long time. And so just how networking and basketball can open up doors for you in your 100%. Later career and what you do. But also, like you said, the self-taught and all that. So go ahead and fix the net. Let the people know you still work hard.
You know what I'm saying? Bam.
So, man, now you're fully transitioned to being a musician.
Right.
So you're an artist, you're a producer, you're an engineer. Mm-hmm. He put this amazing deck together, just this business side of it.
Yeah.
How do I want to ask this? How about this? What's next for you? What can we look forward to from Khalil that we can expect?
Mm. I would say I got a placement coming up tomorrow in Power, another one, so that's good.
Oh, you can tell it now because this won't post until Monday.
So. I got a placement on Power on the most recent episode, so go check that out. Song Authentic off a project that I put out this year, so that's going to be fire. I'm honestly letting this last project I just put out ride a little more because people are starting to hit me up now as it's starting to grow on people. There's a lot of songs, so people are starting to grow, and I think people are starting to understand my intention behind my music, you know, because that was my goal this year, is to showcase my entire artistic capabilities, because I don't think I just got one sound. I don't think I'm just West Coast, you know? So the next project for me is gonna be all R&B. So I'm gonna show the R&B side.
What do you mean by that? You sing?
Yeah, a little bit. Not like super vocal.
Are you like some Bryson Tiller?
I would say.
Who don't sing but sing? Drake? Yeah. Aubrey? Anyways,
like that kind of R&B, like, you're right, like the Drake, Brent Faiyaz, like, you know, kind of like, I'm not going to say Party because Party got vocals. Nah, you good, it's all good, it's all good. But I would say, yeah, like a mixture of like rapping R&B, so not like super Kalani type R&B, you know, but like, oh, this is an R&B vibe. I didn't know he could do this, you know what I'm saying? So like, yeah, I put out a very personal, you know, project at the top of the year, which is speaking to from where literally where my mind was at, where my heart was at, which I felt like a lot of people connected to, which is, you know, my point. This last project was like, I'm around NBA guys all summer. All my friends are in the NBA. Like, I know what I'm doing in these clubs every summer. Like, I'm going to be super intentional because that's what the last couple summers have been. And they're starting to run my music in these clubs. They're starting to like, it's starting to go. So this summer, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have music ready again, like I did last summer. I'm going to have music ready. So that's what the whole purpose of this project was going to be about. Everybody's like, oh, I'm outside. Perfect. We're going to capitalize on that. And then I'm going to showcase I can do Afro beats, drill beats.
Don't bring the Afro beats. That's my stuff.
Yeah. Right, like, if you go listen to the project, there's literally 11 songs on there, and they all kind of got different sounds.
That's so dope.
And then the next project is showcasing my artistic ability. And then next year, I'm going to really try to hone in on just building my team, musical team I have around me, because it literally just be me in a studio. Like, homies will send me beats and I'll do the post-production, I'll do the mixing and mastering, I'll do the cover art. I literally, everything is my brain and just me in a studio. So I'm looking forward to building out, you know, again, networking and building out a musical team. So having more producers, having more actual musicians that play instrumentations, because next year I want to be super musical, you know? And then two, we'll see what happens by the end of the year. Yeah, you know, I got some things I can't speak on.
What you said is enough, man. It's dope to look forward to and to see you pivot, man, from the hoop and through the injuries and through all that to, man, doing your thing and going all in with this music, man. I do want to, thanks for sharing all that.
Oh, yeah,
I do want to talk about the basketball side as well. You're in the gym. Like you said, you don't post. I know you in the gym. We see your content on the videos.
I'm in that gym.
You know, like, he has an amazing social media team, and his social media has exploded.
Yeah.
But he's been doing this. I want to make that clear. Olin's been doing this, and he just finally got it out there.
Yeah.
And so you're behind the scenes, but you're not. You're on the front lines at the same time.
Yeah.
What's your experience been like, taking what you've learned throughout the years as a trainer and applying it to these high-level players, and then, like you said, seeing them use something you worked on.
Yeah.
What's that experience like?
It's super dope, man, because I honestly kind of like not telling people that I'm still training. They'll see pictures of me in the gym and whatnot, but I'm not sure they know what degree, but my dad be chilling sometimes. He'll be like, yo, you got it, son, you know? Like, and not in a bad way, but like he's done this, you know, and I want him to be able to take a step back and just come in and, you know, do that. And but it's been dope, man. I appreciate him giving me the freedom and the responsibility, you know, to be the main trainer amongst, you know, my best friend Brandon, which has been super, super fire. But yeah, I'm in the gym and it's dope to see all the guys, you know, doing that. For me personally, it's just fulfilling, man. Like, you know, and I get to be creative, and I think the attention to detail that my dad had coming up has instilled in my brain. So even when the smallest of drills, like it might be simple or it might be complex, and people are like, oh, what's that gonna do? Wait till you get in the game, you gotta react it. You know what I'm saying? So I would say that's been super dope. For me, staying active and staying around a sport that I've loved for years has been dope. I'm learning new things daily, even myself, that I didn't, you know, do when I was coming up. He's changed his whole kind of approach than when I was a kid, you know, which I'm like, yeah, you need to be a little crazier, but it's a new era, you know what I'm saying? Because he was, you know, but for it's dope, man. Even though I'm still learning from him constantly, because he's constantly elevating his training. And when I'm coming in, just to seeing the difference, like, you don't do the same thing for every player, you know what I mean? And that's been my biggest thing for the past couple of years. Like, I see you know, because they see, oh, he's a guard, we got everybody doing guard stuff. Like, nah, like, there's attention to detail for each player. We watch film, what their role is on the court, how are they going to solidify their role? Yep. Like, it's literally that, you know, that attention to detail. So I'm going to say that. It's been fun, man. I get to really be creative, and they call me the handle guy in the gym, I guess, you know, because nobody can.
Yo, this dude got crazy handles, bro. The things this man can do with two basketballs in his hands are, like, wild. Like,
yeah.
Like, and he was doing that at 16, 17 years yeah. old, man. And it's, like, it's pounding the ball, too. It's crazy, man. Like,
yeah. Shout out to God, man, because it was something I've always naturally had was that feel for the ball. You know what I mean? And I think with him, he just tailored that, and he taught me the game, you know, and yeah. I think that's a huge thing too, because nobody knows he's a great trainer, but he's also an amazing coach, you know yeah. what I mean? Like, and I wish he would go coach somewhere, like, for real, you know, like.
He coaching at Oakwood? I saw he was coaching the game this Saturday at Oakwood, and he was coaching his butt off, bro. He's doing it. I know what you mean, though.
You know what I mean.
You want him to go lead somewhere.
Go really, you know, but he got a baby and I and a young kid, so I get he's doing his best, but he's a really good coach, and I think that's a really big element of his training is, like, also teaching the game and the feel for it, you know. And there's been a lot of drills I started implementing. He's like, oh, I'm like, yeah, let's do that, you know. Yeah, let's do it. But it's fun, man. For me, it's dope. Again, all these guys are my friends. You know, I know I've been able to go up to Wasserman the last couple of years and just, you know, work out with all the guys there and be friends with them. So now I got guys I go train at their facilities and all types of the college guys. It's fun, man, because they're looking at
me. I got to challenge you, man, to show some of that. And I'm going to tell you why. In this day and age, right? So I was very low key. You know, I lived in a gym and I didn't post nothing for years as well, right?
Yeah.
And what I notice is that it's our gift of giving back.
Mm.
You have to show people who are like you that they can do what you do. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is a very special side of you that nobody knows, like that you're still connected to this game, like tough.
Yeah, very.
More than other people who get a lot of clout for things that aren't really in the trenches.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying show it all. I'm not saying you have a videographer.
Yeah.
But man, just document what you're doing and show people.
Yeah.
Because it's important.
Yeah.
It's important to us that Khalil's still connected to hoop. For those who, like, I used to guard you at practice.
Yeah.
Nobody else could really hold you like, you know?
Yeah.
We've been in the mud with you, man. So to see you still being able to express yourself through that game of basketball.
Yeah.
But you having fun, but you're doing it with NBA cats.
Yeah.
That's different.
Yeah.
I want you to think about that. Nah, that's 100%. Different, man. So find a way to document that and show the world that, hey, yeah, I'm an artist, but I still do this.
Yeah.
Make it a separate page. It ain't gotta be your music page.
That's
make
what I've been trying to figure out, man. Cause I've been, that's the thing I've realized lately is cause I was so, that's the thing what music will do to me is I'll be in this cocoon, you know, and I was in this cocoon for too long. So now I'm like, I need to showcase more of the gifts that God has given me, and that
life is you. You are a brand.
Yeah, I'm not just this. I'm not just that. I'm a human again that can do all these things. And I think that again, that's been the biggest realization this year for me for what I was going through. So I'm like, all right, let me get back to. Because for me, I wanted to establish myself. And I was thinking my dad didn't understand. I'm like, no, I got to establish myself as because I still got people that come to me, oh, you do music. And that seeps in the back of my brain, and I go to the studio, I'm like, you know what I mean? That, like, Michael Jordan, like.
You're going to see.
Oh, you still in the music? I got you. So,
like somebody, you still hoop?
Exactly. So, but, for me, I just wanted to really establish myself these last years. Like, no, I make music. I'm not, like, it's not a hobby. It's not, I'm basketball, music. But he was like, you need to be like this person. I'm like, no, I don't need to be like that person. There's a different level that I have to, because that's the level I want to be at with music. I don't want to be a gimmicky or whatever I gotta really build a real artistry side to this, and people gotta respect me as, oh, he's an artist. Then I can kind of be like, oh yeah, well, I train now and I do, you know what I mean? Like, oh.
Well, no, it's your hustle to get to where you need to be.
Exactly.
That's how you make your money.
Because perception for me is huge.
Like, other artists are servers at restaurants. Other artists are Uber drivers. Other artists do other things. Yours is just, I train NBA players.
Yeah, which is a blessing, man. Yeah, I'm so glad that I can do that, you know. And even the high school guys, you got a lot of the top high school guys in the country, college guys. So for me, it's just, man, it's dope, man. And I don't know why. I kind of know why I didn't post.
It's cool why you don't. I'm challenging you to. I'm not saying post.
Do it, but
because it's part of the journey that we need to see. Because we need to see that Khalil transition from Campbell Hall to Village Christian to not playing to, hey, in my dark time, I picked up this pen.
Yeah.
And now the thing that's bringing me back and that's funding my dream is the thing that I worked on my whole life. It didn't disappear. It's not like you just stop hooping.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do that. I know a player right now who committed his whole life to hoop, stopped playing around the same time you did as far as age, and is trying to be an artist, but is disconnected from hoop. And I think that's why they're not happy, man. There's no joy because they're not connected to the thing that fueled them. And
to be fair, though, I mean, I don't know what part of the journey they're at, but I couldn't even watch basketball for a minute. Like,
they're when did you graduate? 15?
15.
All right, I'm gonna give him another year then. He ain't that far off from you. So.
Okay, all right.
He ain't that far off from you, but
he's not like a young bull. He's kind of
That's what I'm saying. I think you played against him in high school.
Oh, okay.
And so that's what I'm saying. It's nah, man.
At this point, no, you gotta reconnect. That's what I had to do. I disconnected for maybe 2 or 3 years and nobody ever understood it. Then my first summer back around basketball was literally, I think, 3 years ago when I went to go intern up at Wasserman. Yeah. And it started off as an internship. And then,
I didn't even know you interned up there.
Oh, yeah. They were like, I interned with Wasserman, like, I think 3 summers ago. Because my dad was a trainer up there. Right. They were like, oh, we don't care who you are. Like, you're going to come and intern.
Right.
But, like, 3 weeks after, they got me on this court, my dad on that court, and Brandon on that court. We all got our own players. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, and then, mind you, it's like from 8 to 2, we got vets, rookies, mid players. You know what I mean? So it's just like doing this. So it's like, it wasn't an intern for too long. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I couldn't do it again, though. My voice was shot.
Different. I mean, that summer grind is different.
Yeah.
I have a question, then we'll hop into our other segments.
Okay.
What is something that you do very well that you're not doing?
What's something that I do very well that I'm currently not doing? I want to say like acting, but I'm getting into that. So I've been pressing play on everybody in my network when it comes to the acting, modeling side. I'd say that. What else? I want to say. Repeat the question again.
Something that you're doing, that you're very good at.
Very good at.
That you're not doing.
I'm not doing. Bringing people together and building a community as far as like other things that I'm interested in, I would say. Like, I'm nice at bowling. I'm starting to build a bowling community. I might start a little bowling league. I say, like, when it comes to the meditative yoga side of things, like building that community. And for me too, finding my community, because I feel like I'm a very personable comedy, you know what I'm saying? Like, doing all that. So I'm just trying to tap into different things that I really am interested in, you know? And I've been single for a while now too, so I'm like, I have time to just like be, I haven't been by myself really in adulthood for real until like the last year and a half. So I've had a lot of like, you know, again, continuing to find myself. But I would say, I would say probably acting and stuff like that.
I just wanted to acknowledge that so you know that.
Yeah.
When you're good at something, man, pursue it. Your focus on your tunnel vision on music is what it should be.
Yeah.
And then you have basketball that funds that, and then the acting thing, that kind of comes with the artist.
100%.
You can tap into both of those at the same time.
Yeah.
But I just wanted you to acknowledge that and recognize that. Karina, I actually have to do that too.
Oh yeah.
And this camera's blinking red, is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so what's something that you do well that you're not doing right now?
Art.
You know, oh, mic up.
I thought you were kidding when you said earlier to get a mic. Something I'm really good at that I'm not doing currently is physical art. I can draw really well and paint, and I never ever really do that. I do it maybe once a year, and I paint a wall, not even actual art.
Yeah.
So that's something that it's like therapy.
All right, so I'm going to challenge you, because I have two things that I can have you do so you can express your gift and make money from it. One, I want you to start painting basketballs with whatever people want, and I promise you, the people that we know will buy them.
Hell yeah.
I'm just telling you for sure. Like, whatever his album cover is, we're going to, his next album, I'm going to pay for it. His next album, we're going to paint on the basketball and then be up in the studio. Am I lying?
That'd be fucking fire. Oh, my bad. That'd be fire.
Okay, and then two, we need designs for the fall classic. I want one shirt that is
your
creative design, huh?
Graphic design is different.
I want you to paint it, and then we will put it on the shirt.
Yeah.
Digitalize it?
Sure.
Digitalize
it? She can't say that word. It's okay. We're gonna pay for creative.
All right. This is a good idea. That's fire. Cause even like something like this,
That's the Fresh Prince ball from Bel Air.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little dirty. We used it, but all right. It's dope. All right, man, thank you for sharing your journey, man.
And of course.
Continue, man. We're here to support.
Yeah.
And, man, we're going to talk after this, man, because I got my mind is racing, which is people I can connect you with and things that you can do to elevate your experience, man.
Of course. Which I
this show is about all about elevating your game. Let's get in there, Karina. Elevate your game. all right, Mount Rushmore, my Rushmore.
Mm.
Your top four West Coast artists of all time. Let's go.
Can I do two different Mount Rushmores?
Excuse me?
Can I do two different like versions of a Mount Rushmore? Like, or can I do like this kind of Mount Rushmore for West Coast and then my personal like?
I agree.
Like, because it's subjective.
Because so.
My Mount Rushmore people gonna look at me like, huh? Because, but
oh, cool.
It's not. I don't want them.
I want to hear yours first, though.
And then my personal Mount Rushmore, and again, this has nothing against.
No. It's why is your Rushmore? So
I'm a West Coast artist, so people gonna look at me like, bro.
Go ahead. All right.
So my Mount Rushmore, my personal Mount Rushmore that I feel would be, you got Pac. That's number one. Two, I'm gonna go. Because he had a profound impact on my high school at Campbell Hall. It was Dom Kennedy and Nipsey. I kind of put them together. I guess I can't. But Dom, Nip, and then I'm going to put Tyler, the Creator, just because how global he took it. You know what I mean? And I feel like he's one of, especially nowadays, because people want a certain sound coming out of L.A., which is a real battle for me, is like Tyler was the one that didn't have that typical West Coast sound that took it global and has, to me, the most longevity recently of a West Coast artist, you know? Now, when it comes to like
longevity, close to it. I mean,
Tyler been around for 12, 13 years.
So has YG.
Well, again, so that's what I'm saying. YG.
Okay, but go ahead.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like,
it's cool. I'm going to get to mine. Go ahead.
All right. Then the normal Mount Rushmore would be Dre, you know what I mean? Pac. I would go. Oh, I didn't even say Kendrick. Kendrick was in that last Mount Rushmore.
Okay.
Because that's why I put Dom together. Yeah. So it was Kendrick. Kendrick, Pac, Nipsey and Dom, Tyler. And Tyler, the Creator.
Dope. Okay.
I'll leave it there.
All right. And then your other Mount Rushmore?
It was just going to be what OGs probably wanted to hear.
No, cool.
All right.
we know who the world's for. But no, this is about your Rushmore. Yeah, that's why it's specific. Mine. And I ain't no artist or nothing, but this is who it is. So DJ Quick.
Yeah.
And I just grew up on Quick.
Yeah.
And his sound, like you said, his sound, like sounds doing something to your soul.
Yeah.
His bass lines, his the soul that's in his music, man. The funk, that's my stuff. Two is The Game. I think people sleep on The Game as a top artist of all time. If you listen back to the documentary, the Doctor's Advocate, like, and to this day, he's still making hits, dog. Yeah. And he talking about something in his stuff.
Yeah,
man.
He's one of the best rappers to ever touch a mic.
There you go.
Whether people want to say it or not, The Game is ridiculous when it comes to his pen.
People sleep on him. So
yeah, facts.
So I got The Game, DJ Quick. So here's a sleeper. People not gonna like it probably. I don't even know if people know who this is. It's Roscoe. He's from Philly, but he was a West Coast rapper. He was with Dog Pound.
He's from Philly?
But he was like, too. Pac's from New York.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
So,
touché. Touché.
It is what it is. But he was a West Coast rapper. He was with DPG. Okay. That's why. And look up Roscoe. What's the CD called? California something. He made Summertime. It's cool. I'll send you some tracks.
Summertime, no, that one?
That's DJ. That's Will Smith.
Roscoe. Yeah, okay. Who's Roscoe?
Awesome.
I gotta look him up.
His name is just Roscoe.
Just Roscoe?
Yeah, Corrupt is.
Yeah.
Dazzin Corrupt. He was with Dazzin Corrupt.
He was there.
He signed with Dazzin Corrupt on DPG. He was there from the late 90s to early 2000s. Mm. He's just one of my personal favorites.
Okay.
I just liked how he flowed. His flow was dope. Because it was low key Philly, but out of West
Coast. I'm gonna go listen, so yeah.
I'm gonna send you some his stuff.
It's Roscoe.
Four, I'm probably gonna have to. Oof. Man, I think I. So this is who was in my mind. I got Pop, I got Nipsey, and I got E-40. Because E-40 is West Coast.
He is.
And so.
Oh, you got the Bay too. Yeah.
That is West Coast. Crazy. Sorry.
Yeah,
it was
even.
Yeah, damn.
Yeah, see, y'all thinking now. I said West Coast. I think I'm gonna have to go with Nipsey. And Pac, I know all his stuff. I grew up with it. There is something about Nipsey's authenticity. right? Where Pac, I'm not saying he wasn't authentic, but also there's a lot of things that influence his music that was happening in his life at that time, where Nipsey's just been about that marathon.
Exactly.
His whole life. I'll give you that, spitting yeah. game. And like, if I tell my kids to listen to a West Coast artist, it's probably gonna be Nipsey.
Yeah.
Because there's game spit in the middle Profit of talk. Everything else he's doing. So that's my four for the West Coast. Karina, do you wanna go?
Of course.
All right, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I'm curious. Yeah.
The game, Don Kennedy. I have to put Vince Staples.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And then I like D Smoke. So these are like my four, because D Smoke okay. brought attention to the Mexican community.
Okay, I have no idea who D Smoke is.
He's Sir's brother.
Who?
Sir, you know the R&B artist, Sir.
So my age. That's why they call me Yonk. All right.
The rhythm and flow. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I got to play that. So you look at, I'm going to put you on Roscoe, you put me on D Smoke.
Yeah, yeah. D Smoke's hard because he raps in Spanish too. It's fire.
Oh, that's dope.
He was a Spanish teacher.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fire.
Boxing.
Yeah, yeah.
He did the show.
Yeah.
And there's one person everybody sleeps on that doesn't get mentioned, is Snoop.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
He's the LeBron James of rap.
Like, oh.
He's not? He's been around forever.
The LeBron James of rap?
Music.
I'm going to have
longevity.
I'm going to have to say Drake is the...
Staying relevant?
I think, but that's bigger than rap. I think he's bigger than music.
Yeah.
So is LeBron James.
In a way.
Yeah.
So
no.
My mom knows
yes, no. Yeah.
My mom doesn't
really know
who Brian is. That's just
because
my mom.
Mm.
My mom is from Mexico. She can write
my song. Yeah, because she's old. I'm not talking. Sorry. I don't mean that. She's older. Your mom is older. So she doesn't recognize Brian because of when he came into the game. I'm just saying it's longevity and the level in which he do it. Snoop Dogg drop a song tomorrow and still get 25 and 10.
I don't think so.
Okay, maybe it's because I'm old.
I would accredit that. Yeah, Snoop.
I didn't grow up with him being a rapper. I grew up with him being like a legend. Like just a LA legend. It's like Ice Cube is.
Because you're like 21. That's
why. First of all, I'm 26. 5 years.
All good. great conversation. Thank you, man.
You're not getting away with this LeBron James talk. We're not. That's crazy. LeBron of rap.
So you're saying I'm down talking LeBron? Is that what you guys?
No, I would say
because LeBron's my GOAT.
I'm not disrespecting Snoop. I say like, Drake is the LeBron of rap, for as far as longevity goes.
Is he?
Yeah, or Jay-Z.
Jay-Z's Jordan.
Jay-Z could be Jordan. I feel like Drake is like the Bron. I'm gonna put Kendrick and Kobe in the same kind of comparison because
I struggle with Drake right now because of this latest beef. Jay-Z has not lost the beef where we stopped listening to his music. Huh? Who? No, I love Nas. Nas is great,
but Jay annihilated Nas.
But if when Jay-Z drops, we listen to every Jay-Z album.
Yeah. I'm just saying. No, I would say Jay-Z's the Jordan.
You listened to the last 20 Drake songs that dropped in the last month?
I did.
You didn't even know he dropped that many songs?
I did. I mean, I keep in touch. Like he.
Okay, you're an artist. So you listened to all of them?
I'm not going to discredit how great I think Drake is as an artist just because he's going through this thing with Kendrick. But I think this is the live. I told my homies, this is the live battle and we all need as fans to accept it. This is the Kobe versus Bron that we never got as far as rap goes. Because it's to me, Kendrick and Drake, aside from Cole, are actually the two greatest rappers and artists that have taken this music thing to new heights and a new level. And there's other artists that have, I'm not getting it wrong.
No, it's
but when it comes to legacy artists.
Like we talking about like, Drake is a great entertainer, artist. He does have dope lyrics and great captions for your Instagram. He is not Kendrick and J. Cole, bro. They speak to your soul about stuff that's really happening, where Drake is about his lifestyle, which has been great because he's been an actor since he was a teenager, so he's always had money. I'm not saying he didn't struggle and didn't have 100%. Trauma, but coming where like where J. Cole talks about his life and the thing, not and he went to school. He's, you know.
But then there's my thing is like,
talk to me.
Here's my thing is like, because again, with the in respect of the work ethic. And Lecrae, he has said it in this interview that I just came across the other day, where I don't know if you saw it too, but he was like, Drake is a fan of he's a product of a fan of the culture, and Kendrick is a product of
the culture. Was that your sugar that just popped?
No, that was my elbow.
Okay, cool.
I'm getting sure all everything
popped. I make sure you didn't pop that up, and we ain't got insurance.
Imagine I'm like, aha. No, that'd be crazy. I'm just old. But no, I would say, yeah, that's what I would say. Oh, Lecrae, he was like saying that Drake is a fan of the culture, which I would say that, but Drake has worked so hard to become a part of the culture and take over the music. You know what I mean? And that's where my respect for Drake will always be there, is because
I respect that.
I know how much work he put in for who he was and where he comes from, mm-hmm. to even be at the top of hip hop. You know what I mean? Whether people want to say, oh yeah, I helped with this or whatever the case is, that work ethic, I'm gonna always respect, because he's a kid from Canada that, yeah, he struggled maybe and had some other things. He was an actor, whatever. The fact that he worked so hard to get to the top of the game and understand rap and music so much so, where he elevated himself to the top of it.
Yeah.
That to me is like,
you're, I like that. I like that argument.
Yeah,
that's me.
And most people,
I wasn't a naturally talented. I didn't come out dribbling two basketballs.
You feel me?
I had to work.
And
so
he has the voice too. And it's like, that's like, bro, that's something
we
that
love
you
a
can't
natural
discredit.
Talent, man. I love natural talent that works hard at the same. That's LeBron, right? He's naturally gifted and he works hard.
Exactly. And then Kendrick is very, very, very skillful rapper. And again, Drake is too. But Kendrick is just, there's things of Kendrick's artistry that Drake can't emulate, vice versa, which is why I respect both. You know what I'm saying? But it's always going to be the, that's why I say it's the Kobe Bron, because they're just not the same player. But you have to say one's greater than the other. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like, it's hard, you know? And that's why I would say I can't discredit, you know, I can't get caught up in the culture of life now, because it's nasty work. You go on social media and just see all the people hop on and say whatever, and I think this is my biggest problem with social media, but it's discrediting, and the new era does it too. Even with hoop, I see it in the gym. Like, kids will come in there and start talking crazy, and they haven't done anything.
Right.
They lost five games in a row. This literally happened this weekend. Us as coaches are busting our players' butts, and they're some of the top players in the country. They didn't win a game, and they think they're talking. And we are like, y'all haven't won a game, and you guys are talking to us. Well, that's the problem. It's like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. You guys can't discredit the work that have, you know, not you, but like, people can't discredit the work. So for Drake, I feel like people are starting to discredit all the work he put in to even be where he's at, you know?
I don't discredit that at all.
100%.
I'm still a fan. I still listen. Yeah. Like, my favorite albums is a little older for Drake.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying that my hope was that Drake would have came out. Like, when the Jay-Z and Nas beef was over, we still respected both.
100%.
I lost a little respect for Drake because of how he finished this. It wasn't clean. It wasn't like
Kendrick
delivered that haymaker.
Not like us.
You
crazy
could get humble, even like, yo, the shot dog. I don't know if Drake did that, but you know what? We could talk about it. You need your own podcast, by the way. I'm putting that out in this world.
You want to? I'm down.
All right. We here. All right. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We're flipping the script.
All right.
Two questions for me would be about anything in the world.
Yeah. Honestly, man, since I met you, what's the biggest thing you've learned on a human level as far as like, I don't even know what I'm trying to ask. I want to just, I don't know if you're getting where I'm coming from, but like, what's the biggest thing you've learned, advice you can give me that you've learned as a human and a man of God since I've met you 12 plus years ago, and where you're at now from where you were then?
That obedience comes before sacrifice. And a lot of people want to give up things to become somebody. But when you have a relationship with God and you're obedient to your relationship with God, not what the church says, not what your homie is telling you who happens to be a Christian.
Yeah.
But when you're in a real relationship with God and you are obedient, you have faith in what your relationship with God is telling you, and it's rooted back into the word. That's how you confirm things. That's what you listen to. Not the thing that is the grind, the hard work. Because when you have God, you got favor, you have grace, you have something that's way more powerful than any hard work can do. And so that's why I'm so big on pushing your relationship with God, because once you get to know him, you don't ever want to leave. Because you'll see things and hear things and do things that he wants. And you start to walk in that. And the more and more I do that as I get older, with having my wife for 11 years, my kids now, all y'all growing up, all y'all growing up now, all the kids that I've trained and coached or whatever, my friends that, you know, we do life together. When there is clear relationship with God, when God tells me something clearly, he tells me no because he's protecting me from something. But when he tells me yes, it is beyond my thoughts, anything I can think, imagine, the doors he opens for you, and how quick it is. We, short story, Karina is super busy. She has a lot of stuff going on. She's like, she's dope. She's doing her thing. And we're literally on the phone. She was like, man, I need somebody to help edit this stuff. 4 hours later, 5 hours later, the same day, a kid that one of my first training clients as a trainer, who is terrible at basketball, terrible, awful. Dylan, you suck at basketball. Dylan, you know what Dylan I'm talking about. None of my Dylans that hoop, the other Dylan, calls me and says, dude, I love what you're doing on social media. I want to help you. I kind of know the space. I want to help you, and I don't want to charge you anything. Literally the same day. And it was because she spoke it in faith. I believed that. I was like, all right, cool, we're going to find somebody. Like, it wasn't. But walking with God, that's the kind of doors that open. And so that's my biggest thing. So be obedient to God before any of this other stuff that people talk about, the grind, the, you got a 24/7 with God, you got favor, man. So
100%. Oh, that's what I wanted. That's the answer I was looking for. And then two, what's next for you, man?
You can't ask that question. Oh. I just answered it like two episodes ago.
Really?
All right, yeah, I'll tell you, but you guys come up with another question. Just working in this space more, just highlighting people's lives and being an encourager, man. Like I want to see people do great. So working on like just being a peak performance coach, guide, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I still have core. And so, you know, taking care of what I have already, being a great husband, a great father to my kids. And just helping people become the best version of themselves. That's that's the ultimate goal. And so there's vehicles I have in place to do that. I have the basketball firm, which consults with kids how to be a college athlete. And then just step into this space of, man, like, let's get you to where you need to be. Let me plug you. I know people. Let me plug you. Let's work on that growth. So go ahead, ask another.
The next one is going to be, what's the biggest way you've changed as a man since you've had your kids?
Patience. Patience.
Yeah,
you learn that, you know, people say it all the time. I watch when you have kids. I seen the patience I have to have for the decisions they make. They're watching my every move. And so I have to take a deep breath before I react or say anything. Because my daughter's going to copy me. She's funny. Walks up to me like, hey, bro, what you doing over here? Like, she comes at me because she sees me do it, right? And she walks around singing, they're not like us. Like, that's what she does. And does the beat. Like, she does it all. Like, I'm like, okay, I got to really watch what I do around her. So I'm patient in my decision making where I used to be. Hey, let's go. And then with my son, dealing with him, I have to have patience. He's trying to understand his emotions, how to handle them. And back in my day, we just used to get whoopings.
The belt.
Get popped up. And so it's a different day. It's a different situation for my son. And so learning to be with him, right? So look, I want my relationship with them to mirror what God is to us. So they know how to have a relationship with the real father. And so God doesn't whoop me every time I do something wrong.
Very true.
Sometimes he talks to me. Sometimes he hugs me. Sometimes he doesn't do anything. And so I want to be that example to them. And so I got to sit with them through his mess and, hey, let's calm down together. You want to be mad? Hey, let's go over here. We could be mad together and show him how to work through that. And he's only three, mind you. You know, this is a 3-year old, but he needs that. My daughter's 5. They need that. So
this is the best age to regulate the emotions in healthy ways so they that's just the prime age, you know. Yeah. Like you said, so I'll be trying to, I mean, not trying to tell my mom, but these are conversations we have too, because yeah. I got little siblings, and seeing her adjustment, you know, from when she was raising me to now is completely crazy, different.
Right?
And her patience level is here. I'm like, no, you gotta, you know, and again, it's easier said than done. So I don't talk to her like I don't know what she goes through, but just like, and that's another understanding I've had to have is growing up with, you know, having little siblings, like, oh, and having grace for my mom. Because I'm like, yo, you raised me a certain way, I think, you know, and but it's again showing up for her. So anyways, yeah, that was good question, good answer, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Man, that's your camera. You got 24-second shot clock. Let the people know where they can find you and any message that you have.
At Khalil Simplest on all social media platforms. And the message I have is nobody's coming to save you. So you gotta strap them boots up. Again, talk to God daily and yeah, just know no one's coming to save you but you. So get off your ass and get to it.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
Sorry, give me a hug. Man, I'm glad we did this.
Yes, sir. That's all we have for you today, folks. See you next time. Peace.